Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in on A Little Bit of Everything with me, and I am your host, Angelica. This is a podcast that talks about a little bit of everything, so sit back and enjoy the show. And welcome back to another episode of A Little Bit of Everything with me. Today, my guest is a reality TV producer, 15 years in the unscripted industry. I'm so excited to have him. Welcome, Steve, to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited because reality TV is my thing. It's like my guilty pleasure. Thank you.
Of course. Yeah. You and a lot of other people, you keep us employed. So keep watching.
Yes, I will. Trust me. I always keep watching. And I, you know, it's when I saw that you did Outdaughtered, I was like, oh my God, something about those Quints. I'm like, oh, I don't have kids though, but I do enjoy them. It's their tantrums, their the goofiness, the cuteness, everything. I'm just like, I'm in for it. Like, I love it.
Yeah, they're adorable kids, and Adam and Danielle are wonderful parents. And it's you know, it's one of those shows that, you know, the kind of philosophy that TLC has and that show really, you know, exemplifies is it's just, you know, it's your life magnified. You know, it's just like any family, but it's magnified by five. And I think we did a really good job, you know, when I was on the show. I'm not on the show anymore, but when I was on the show, like, that was what we aimed to do, was take this family that really was just like any family, and then bam, for, you know, magic, not magically, but before they knew it, they had five, you know, they had quintuplets. Mm-hmm. And it's, how do you deal with that? And, you know, I think that's the thing that we captured really well in season two was, you know, we really tried to just be flies on the wall, which I think is what people love about that show, is you feel like you're really there with them. Yes, they are adorable.
I definitely agree with that. Like, you, it just intrigued me right away. Like, I know I've seen 19 Kids and Counting, and I was just like, hey, these are 19 kids, and you, they've been on TV for so long. And then seeing Outdaughtered, I'm just like, okay, this is just five. So what is the difference from 19 to five? Coming from somebody who doesn't have kids, of course. So even having one child, I'm just like, oh, okay. I got to think this out and think this through. But, you know, I really liked the show and the way it's been portrayed and seen their life. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I just want to give them like a hug and say, you guys are doing a great job. It's okay. And, you know, you want to give them that support. But of course, they hear it from social media. I'm pretty sure they get a lot of fan mail, you know, kind of saying like, you're doing a great job. But I know you, besides Outdaughtered, you've done other shows. Can you tell me which other shows you've done?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest show that I've done is Extreme Makeover Home Edition, which was a huge part of my life and a huge part of my career. And I did two seasons of that, season 7 and season 8. I also did BattleBots for ABC, which is a huge, you know, robot competition, worldwide competition that's now on Discovery. I did that. I did the Rachel Zoe Project. I was a supervising producer and director on the Rachel Zoe Project, which is a fantastic fashion docuseries for Bravo. And that was, I was really fortunate to do that. You know, I got to go to New York Fashion Week, got to go to Paris Fashion Week. So that was a real experience for me. Many, many years ago, like closer to when I first moved to Los Angeles, I did a show called Pros Versus Joes. And if you have sports fans, any sports fans that listen to your show, they probably remember that. It was on Spike back then. It ran for about 5 seasons. I did 2 of them. And that was, for someone like myself who likes sports, it was a lot of fun because I got to interview people like Dennis Rodman, people like Bo Jackson and Jerry Rice, Michael Irvin. So some of the best athletes in their sports ever, all in one place. So that was a lot of fun for me. God, I've done a lot of shows, and it's just tough to remember all of them sometimes. But yeah, like, and then, you know, I've done some smaller shows that people may not have seen, like Lace Up the Ultimate Sneaker Challenge was on YouTube that I was the executive producer on. And we had, you know, great guests on that, like James Harden and Damian Lillard and Anthony Anderson and Macklemore and Ashley Graham and Jamie Chung and Eddie Wong. So that was a lot of fun. And again, I'm a sneakerhead. I love sneakers. So that was like a huge deal for me. We shot that in conjunction with Adidas. So, yeah, so I've done a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And that's kind of been something that I've tried to do throughout the 15 years was do a wide variety of shows so that, you know, I can experience as much as I can and kind of build out a very eclectic resume. And that's the nice thing about unscripted television is, you know, over the course of 1 year, you can be on a fishing boat, on a crab fishing boat, and then, you know, you could be making over homes, and then you could be trying to help people find love. So our genre runs the gamut.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I love that. Thanks for sharing. And also, what intrigued you to become a producer and director?
So my story is a little, I mean, everyone in Unscripted does have a unique story because it's not like a lot of professions where you go to college and you sign up for classes and you say, hey, I want to be a reality TV producer, or, you know, because there's no classes that teach you how to do this. The closest thing is if you want to be a documentary filmmaker. Most people either go to broadcasting school, you know, or journalism, or they go to film school with the intention of being a writer, or you want to be a director or an actor, you know, or something like that. Reality television is not something that you really go to class for. You study or train, and hopefully they fix that. And, you know, they do develop classes and whatnot. But for me, you know, I kind of always was attracted to news and sports, and that was where I was headed, was trying to be a sports, you know, sports reporter, sports anchor. And so when I graduated from college, that's where I headed, is I went into local news and I became a sports reporter, sports camera operator, sports producer, sports anchor, very small towns, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Tennessee, like all along the Appalachian Trail. And so for the first 4.5 years after I graduated, that's what I did. I was at three different stations, you know, in that area, and really cutting my teeth. Like, I learned how to operate a camera. I learned how to edit. I learned how to interview people. And it was all sports, you know, so I got to cover the Pittsburgh Steelers. I got to cover West Virginia University, Penn State University, University of Tennessee. So each place I went, you know, I got to cover NASCAR. So I learned a lot just about sports, but I also learned how to tell stories, which was really key once I did move to Los Angeles. But, you know, it was a lot. It was shooting, it was anchoring, it was reporting, writing, and you're not making a lot of money. Like that those tiny stations, you really are, you're doing it because you really want to be, you know, you want to make it up to the big level, whether you're doing sports or news or weather or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I did that for about 4.5 years, and then had kind of one of those life-changing decision moments of like, hey, I'm kind of tired of living in small town America. And I had a buddy who was living out in Los Angeles doing some shows for Fox Sports. And he encouraged me to come on out. And I decided to do as so many people do. You pack up your Ford Escort or whatever you have, and you'd make the drive out. And I did. And I was very fortunate in that this was right around 2004 when reality television was exploding. And I had a very, you know, sizable sports background, and ESPN was dipping their toe into the reality television pool, doing a show called I'd Do Anything, which was kind of like Fear Factor meets sports. And my friend who was working at Fox Sports at the time had passed my resume around, and the team there at I'd Do Anything needed an associate producer. Requirements for that job were they needed somebody who could do interviews, somebody who could operate a camera, and someone who could kind of work in an edit bay with an editor. And I literally had been working on those exact skills for the past 4.5 years. And so I drove literally straight from Cincinnati, where, you know, I'm originally from. I drove from my house 4 straight nights. Like, you know, I would stop at a hotel or whatever, and I drove right to the interview and got the job, you know, which is, you know, I mean, very fortunate. That's why I say I'm very fortunate, because most people it takes a while to get a job, but I drove, I interviewed in a suit of all things, which no one interviews in a suit for reality television. and people still laugh about that. And, but I got the job, and I kind of have been rolling in reality TV ever since. And it was, you know, those first couple of years, I did a lot of sports reality, like I was saying, with Pros versus Joes, and I'd do anything. I did this crazy show called Carpocalypse, which was like a demolition derby show. So it was a lot of those sports-ish type shows for those first 2 years, until then that big boom of house reality shows hit, which is right around 2006. 2007. I mean, it started earlier, but then in 2006, 2007, it was, you know, those were the things, was big house reality. And I ended up doing like four of those right in a row, like boom, 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 those 24/7 house reality shows. And so really, I've been extremely fortunate in terms of working with some great people and building a nice, you know, digital Rolodex of people to work with over the course of the 15 years, and doing a wide variety of shows and kind of working my way up from that first associate producer job to being a showrunner and executive producer, and doing development as well as a development executive. And so it's been, you know, the nice thing about unscripted television is once you are in, as long as you work hard and you build out your, you know, your relationships, it's I don't want to say easy, but there is a path. There's a path for you to work your way up.
Yeah, no, thanks for sharing that. Because now my next question is, how do you get the shows? Like, I know you've applied to the ESPN reality TV. Now, when it comes to different projects, and is it like job hunting where you're kind of like, oh my gosh, there's a new pilot that's coming out, I need to apply for it? Or since you've been in the industry for so long, do people already know you by name? Like, okay, Steve's going to be great for an executive producer for this show. And, you know, we'll have him until obviously for the first season, we'll see how it goes with ratings. Like, how does that process work? Or is it like a bidding war or something? Like, I'm so curious.
Yeah. So, I mean, it works very differently depending on your role and your position, you know, whether you're like a camera operator or a editor, or maybe like a younger producer, if you're just a story producer or a field producer, and then an executive producer. So in the unscripted world, you know, most executive producers have an agent. And so that agent is efforting to put them up for, you know, the bigger jobs, the better jobs, and trying to find them jobs. You know, when you're a camera operator or an editor, you're in demand most of the time. I mean, you are being approached a lot, because, you know, other than when you're in COVID, but you know, you're pretty much taking offers all the time. You don't generally need an agent. You know, we need camera ops, we need audio, we need editors. You know, as long as there's a show, we need people to edit them, and we need people to shoot them. When it comes to producing, it's a little more competitive. And so really it's incumbent upon you to have relationships and maintain those relationships, reach out to people, form, you know, a resume that is respectable, and that you've done shows that people, you've done a good job, and to have recommendations around town. And really, you know, like, you reach out to people, people reach out to you and stay on their radar. But yeah, like the higher level people, you know, when you get to that showrunner level, most of the people, you know, are in touch with their agents, and their agents are kind of handling, dealing with the networks, as well as the high level production company executives who are hiring those people, you know, who run the shows. So it's really a balance, I would say, of people who are just kind of staying in touch with each other. And when a show does pop up and get greenlit, it's saying, hey, I need a camera operator, I need two producers, I need, you know, a director, and hey, let's staff this thing out. And then it's agents who are saying, oh, hey, well, you know, I want network, you know, ABC, I want you to consider my, you know, my five clients for this show, or something like that. So, you know, it's not as, it's a little, I would call it flexible, depending on what your role is, you know, on a show. And it does still require a lot of hustle, even if you have a good agent, you know, because they're, the industry has expanded so much over the past 20 years. And, you know, no matter who you are, there's still competition. You know, I think for the people who have really found a niche, I think it's a lot easier. So, you know, a lot of my friends who did Extreme Makeover Home Edition back in the day have really developed that niche for the home renovation space. And so they work on HGTV shows. So that's, I'll just use that as a perfect example, because that's a better example. So they've really fallen into that, oh, there's a new HGTV show that's coming out. They really know the HGTV crowd. They know the production companies that make those shows. They know the network executives who do those shows. So they really do get approached quite often to do those shows. It's a smaller community, I guess, is what is probably what you're asking. So yeah, for them, that's their world. They're not going to get approached by CBS to do a big competition show. Because that's their, you know, they formed their little niche, and that's actually, from just from a business standpoint, that's a very smart way to continue to stay employed.
Yeah, and it does make total sense. It's like, it's true what you're saying. Like, if you're going to go into, like you said, competition, you're not going to find somebody who's not experiencing competition, because it's a lot of it is involved, like moving around, especially if you're a cameraman, and compared to being the home renovation sector, you're, how much are you moving around with the camera, for example? So yeah, that does complete make sense for sure. And it's really neat how that happens. It's like everyone's in categories and they're finding the jobs within their, like you said, their niche. But yeah, no, that's cool. Now, how much work is really involved when it comes to these reality TV shows? Because I'm just amazed, like, there's sometimes, I think Teen Mom, that's another reality TV show, like, to watch Teen Mom from MTV. I've been growing up with them. It's crazy when they started with 60 and Pregnant. But I noticed now the past two seasons, you're being shown the camera crew and the whole production crew behind the scenes, which is pretty neat, because it's weird. They did this quick change of, let's show the sound guy, let's show the camera person, let's show the executive producer. And for me, it was like, oh my gosh, like, it's about time, because I really want to know what's involved. And, you know, and it's crazy how they develop relationships with their executive producers. Of course, it's been over like almost 10 years of them filming together. But what does it take? How much work is involved, like, especially when you're going to, let's pick the example from Outdaughtered or Extreme Home Edition. What is it involved? Like, what's your itinerary like?
An incredible amount of work. I mean, those two shows are very different.
Yeah.
One is a docu-series, you know, Outdaughtered is a docu-series, and then Extreme Makeover Home Edition is a very formatted home renovation show. You know, it's very extremely formatted. But both take an insane amount of time and effort and detail. So I'll start with Outdaughtered, right? And so, and this, like, this, they've loosened up the schedule now, because the family needs the air, and they need to be able to, you know, for live their life. But in order, you know, to get the amount of content that you need to be able to do 10, 12 episodes a year, you know, or sorry, a season, you know, you're shooting 10 to 12 hours a day, you know, with meal breaks and whatnot. And you're, you know, you're there, you know, they live in Texas, and you're there as a crew for, you know, 3 to 4 months. And, you know, you have a couple breaks, you know, and whatnot, but it's a lot of, you know, preparing and developing organically what storylines are, what big things are going to happen in their life, and then building storylines around that so that it's real. It's got to be real. Nobody wants, you know, this is a real life show, and that's one of the really great things about TLC is they embrace, you know, what happens in their characters' lives, and that's what they want. They don't want things to be fake or you know, they always pointed that out to us. So we really had to work with the Busbys to find out what important things were coming up in their lives, not just next week or the week, or the week after that, but months, you know, we really had to plan far and as far as we could so that we could be prepared. Because, you know, you specifically with kids, like that, you're dealing with five kids plus they've got, you know, a girl that's, you know, they're unpredictable. They get sick. You have to have, you know, and we are paying, you know, we're paying crews. So you have to have a backup plan. Okay, well, somebody's sick. Well, we still have to shoot today. What are we going to shoot? So you really do have to be flexible and you have to be prepared. And you know, you do have to be able to tell stories in a way that works with your cast. You know, and I think that the two of them, Adam and Danielle, are fantastic about that. They understand story. They understand, you know, they're really just terrific. And then truthfully, one of the reasons that show does well is the surrounding, you know, the ancillary characters, the other, you know, the siblings are so, so good. So that show really is about preparation and then really just executing on day of. But you really have to have, you know, backup plans and be able to adjust and move around pieces because you have to have so much content to be able to fill all those episodes. You know, it's just, it's a lot. Docuseries in general are very tough because it's not, you don't necessarily know the end of the episode. Whereas a format, you know, whether it's a competition show and you're building to an elimination, somebody's going home, you know, that you know what you're building towards. A docuseries, it's an arc. And, you know, you need to carry over something from one episode to the next. Or maybe it's an arc that, you know, you've got three season arcs that you're building. And so you're like, okay, well, this is episode three and we're referring back to something that happened in episode one. So it is really tricky in terms of, okay, well, what are we going to shoot this time that we make sure like makes sense because of what we did in episode one. And, you know, a lot of times that's where it gets really tedious and it gets difficult. But it really, for, you know, for a show like that, it really just comes down to preparation because you're dealing with kids and, you know, they need, you know, got to keep them happy.
Yeah. And I'm wowed out because, to be honest with you, I'm thinking, okay, the crew's going to go there and they're just going to film you for the whole entire week. And that's it. They're just going to pick from what's going to make it on television for that 1 hour episode. And, or, you know, I just didn't think like how much planning is involved.
Yeah, no.
And it all makes sense now because it's true. You're creating a storyline as well with the docuseries and you're, you know, they've got birthdays, they're going on vacations. Correct. They're going, for example, the little one, Hazel, like she's gone through her eye appointments and people want to know what's happening with that. And you're kind of going back and forth. So it all, okay. So damn, that's a lot of planning.
it's really does come down to planning because, you know, as much as you want natural reactions from your fam, you know, your characters, you can't, you know, you need your cameras to be in the right place. You need good audio. You need everything. You need releases. You know, you need everything to be buttoned up in order to get the to get the content that you need and for it to be usable. You know, I mean, if you don't know about some big event that's happening in somebody's life and it happens and you're not there, well then what's the, you know, then it didn't happen. You know, that's kind of true. Like our philosophy is if the camera's not there and it happened, well, that doesn't even count. So, you know, it's just being in communication with the talent and understanding what's happening, you know, is crucial. A show like Extreme is different in that you have a lot more control. And it's similar in that the planning and the strategy and is equally, if not more, important. But in terms of understanding the structure of the show, you know, going in that you're taking a family each episode and you're plugging them in, right? And but every family's story is different, and then the design of the home is different, and the different rooms are, you know, but you know, at the end, you know, you can kind of build out the episode. You know that you're going to surprise them at the beginning. How are we going to surprise them? You know, it's just the pieces are changing a little bit, but the pieces are all the same. Okay, we're going to move the bus at the end. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, can we do that in a different way? Or what do we need to know? How many kids do they have? And so how many different kinds of rooms? Okay, well, what are the kids like? So what are the different kinds of rooms? Okay, well, you know, like it becomes a puzzle piece instead of a blank piece of paper in a doc series. So the format helps you at least have something to start with. It's challenging when you get to season, you know, 9, and now they've rebooted it for HGTV because you start to run out of ideas. Mm-hmm. But it's helpful from a brain standpoint for me to go, okay, well, I know I'm going to move the bus at the end. That's the end, you know, that's the end mm-hmm. of the arc. What's the best way to get an emotional reaction then? How do I build that arc, you know, mm-hmm. to get there? So it's a very different way of thinking and storytelling. Both take a tremendous amount of work. You know, Extreme is months of planning to get to that moment when you move the bus and reveal the new house. It's months because, you know, we're building that house in roughly 110 to 120 hours. So the amount of planning on that's just the construction side is mm-hmm. insane. You know, I mean, that starts months and months in advance and talking with, you know, local builders and, you know, getting things approved, you know, just to be able to pull that off. So, and you know, you constantly have to have backup plans if, you know, a vendor falls through and, oh my God, we don't have any windows. Well, okay. Wow. Now what do? We have to figure out where to get windows from. So, and I've seen that happen. You know, I've seen where, you know, I think it was, we didn't have any siding. It was like all of a sudden there was like no siding and, you know, we had incredible, design producers who were like, okay, we'll get on it. And then, you know, before you knew it, you had siding and, that show really is just about teamwork. I mean, that's the ultimate team show because if one link is, you know, weak, then you have to build that link up. It's the ultimate teamwork show.
For sure. Definitely. And with all these hours of content, I know you're trying to create the story, and I feel like I'm going to answer my own question here. So you gotta keep with the storyline, but I feel like there's so much content. What do you choose is what's going to work for that moment?
Well, so each show is different and things have changed a lot, right? So, you know, even in just my 15 years there, you know, there used to be a big push to like, you know, specifically in those house shows, they were considered 24/7 shows. You know, you weren't necessarily rolling for 24/7, but you would have a camera operator at least ready to go, you know, and you were rolling on an insane amount of footage. And there are still some shows, I know Below Deck and maybe Below Deck, I mean, they're shooting a lot. They've got cameras rolling for a majority of the time. And, you know, you still have some of those, you know, Big Brother is a party. Big Brother, I'm pretty sure, is just rolling. Like they've got some, at least one of the cameras is rolling at all times, you know, and some of those house shows. But when you're talking about doc series and a show like Extreme, you're way more picky. Like you really do, you don't want to burn all that media and put your post-production staff in a bind where they're just, you know, they've got so much that they're overloaded. You really do want to give them a fighting chance. Yeah. Budgets are just not to a point where, you know, you can spend endless amounts of time sifting through footage. You want to give them a decent idea of, okay, look, here's the storyline and look, here's the footage that matches with that storyline. You don't want them to be drowning in footage. And that is a bit of a change from the old way of doing things where you just kind of shot and let it roll. So, you know, I think that there's still a big sense of authenticity that you want the authenticity and, you know, you want to let things play out and you want to roll and you let it go until it ends. But I think you definitely want to be more targeted. And that again goes to preparation and, you know, working with the talent to know that something is happening on a certain day and then working with your post-production team to know that this scene is about this topic and we think it should go here in the show. And so that is kind of, you know, it's that coordination between the teams in the field and the teams in the edit bays that really kind of makes that work. But it's a different kind of philosophy that kind of let it roll and keep going until until your camera operator can't, you know, can no longer hold the camera, versus being a little bit more targeted and going, okay, I think we, you know, shoot for a little bit and go, okay, I think we've got it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and moving on, you know, I think it's two different schools of thought. And, you know, I think being practical these days, because of the limited amount of time that we do have, both in the field as well as in the edit bay, you know, I think most people lean towards that. There are some shows that don't have that luxury. You know, you can't really do that on Big Brother or Below Deck. Like,
yeah,
you have to roll. And it does lead to a longer period of time for edit. But that's, you know, that's how it works on that show.
Wow. I'm so amazed. Like, this has been so great. And I'm like, wow. So every time I'm going to be watching reality, I'm going to be like, oh my gosh, this was like, this is what made it. This is what made the cut. So does all the, so sorry, does the cast members have a say with the footage, or is there something in their contract where it's kind of like they don't have control what goes in there because they're agreeing to you're going to be filmed for X amount of hours a week and, you know, we're going to pick from that.
All right. So again, all depends on the show.
Okay.
You know, your competition shows, no, they don't have a say in it. Yeah. You know, that
makes sense.
If it's a show where the cast is producers on the show, Kardashians, mm-hmm. they're going to have a say. Right? Oh. They're going to have a say. But like, you know, Rachel Zoe, for example, you know, I did the Rachel Zoe project. Rachel was an executive producer on the show. She certainly saw the cuts and had a say in what went on. You know, like this wasn't reality, but this was a documentary, right? Like, so the ESPN just had a very successful 10-part documentary series, The Last Dance, about Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls of the 90s, right? I mean, mm-hmm. great ratings and everything. Mm-hmm. So there was a level of criticism that Michael Jordan was a producer on it, his production company, and NBA Entertainment was a producer on it. And so it was a little kind of like, well, hey, it wasn't, you know, Michael Jordan clearly knew what was coming. He was certainly involved. He was a co-owner in the footage.
Yeah.
NBA owns the footage. So clearly it's going to be skewed in a certain way. So yes, if the talent is a producer on the project, they're certainly going to have a chance to see the footage, or at least generally it all depends on the contract. So they may get, you know, a chance just to look at the cut. You know, they mm-hmm. may get a chance to look at one cut and then give a set of notes, and then that's it. You know, speak now or forever hold your peace. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but yeah, if they're a producer on it, if it's about them, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
A lot of celebrities are now getting more involved in terms of like protecting, you know, they want to protect their image and things like that. They, you know, so they're getting more involved, and their agents and their lawyers are asking for, you know, to be able to see things. We dealt with that on the sneaker show that I did for YouTube and the celebrities that we had on that. And I know that the contracts for The Voice are very specific.
Okay.
In terms of those judges are very specific to protect them. So I think, yeah, it really just depends on the show, but your average contestant on a competition show, or your average 90 day fiance participant does not ever get to see the footage.
Yeah.
It would be it's only a rare circumstance.
Got it. Yeah, because you can even tell after when the season's over of 90 Day, they're just like, well, the producers and the editors made me look this way. It's like, I don't think so. You kind of gave them what you were or the person that you were at that moment. Like, I don't know how it's funny because it's always recurring. Like, oh, the producers didn't show my home country, even though it's not part of the storyline. We're not here as National Geographic and talk about your life of living and your country. It's more of your relationship with this American who's here to, you know, kind of see if this is going to work out or not. So you can come over to America. And the other cast members are usually like, oh yeah, the producers made me feel like, you know, made me look a certain way. It's like, no, I'm pretty sure you were told this is reality TV. It's filming for hours and hours. Yeah. Like, how could somebody sit there and kind of say, well, yeah, we're going to ask you to be angry or be sad. That's not the point. Like, it's not reality TV anyway. But yeah, it's funny when I hear that. And I noticed with Total Bellas too, when Total Divas, WWE, they had a reality TV show, and then one of the cast members became an executive producer. And now that they have their own Total Bella show, the Bella twins, I think they're both executive producers. And now it makes sense. It's all coming clear to me. They just want to protect themselves in through this whole reality TV series.
I mean, they have more say in the creative. It's now about them. Yeah. So they have more say. But again, I will stress every contract's going to be different.
Yes.
So I don't necessarily know if they get a pass on notes. You know, it really just depends on what was negotiated. They may just get extra money. You know, it really just depends. But you know, that's been my experience, is if the talent, you know, if the talent is also an executive producer, they do at least get a chance to see the cut, you know, once, you know, they get the chance to see it once. But, you know, everybody's different. Every agent will fight for something different, or the lawyer will fight for something different.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And don't let a contestant or a cast member say that, oh, the producers made us look bad.
I see it so much and I laugh.
Like, you know, you said it, you know, like, we can only do so much. We can do things with music. We can do things with cutaways, like different looks.
Yeah.
You said it, and your facial expression, you know, we're not changing anybody's facial expressions. We're not changing what anybody said. Like, that's where I always laugh when people say, oh, well, you made us look bad. You made us look, I didn't actually. No, you said this. Like, you said this, and that was the look on your face when somebody else said that. So, you know, I mean, like, it's 2020, and people, you know, people know what they're getting into, is what I always say.
Yeah, 100%. Because it reminds me of this one, they were the most hated couple on 90 Day Fiance, because she was so rude and she was a foreigner coming to America. And after the whole season, because everyone on social media was literally hating on this couple, and it was really bad. And she was just like, well, the producers made me look bad. And I'm laughing my head off because I'm like, it's reality TV.
Yeah.
You're not going off of a script portraying a villain. You are the villain.
Correct.
So it's just funny when I hear that, because it really makes me laugh. And so does the whole crew travel? Because it's amazing how you guys get to see new places, new cities, new countries.
It just depends. Like, depends on the show, depends on the situation. I mean, and it's generally, you know, it's budget contingent.
Yeah.
You know, when I did the Rachel Zoe project, you know, I went to New York, you know, we covered New York Fashion Week where Rachel was, and we did Paris Fashion Week, but not everybody went simply for space and for money. Mm-hmm. You know, in Paris, we used our American director of photography, but then we also used a French camera operator, which was a lot of fun for me, who doesn't speak French. that was a blast. I kept trying to talk to him over the walkie-talkie, and they use different terminology, like Zoom and punch in, Zoom, pan, tilt, like all kinds of, they use different terminology, and I just kept yelling. And everyone kept saying, like, you realize that the louder you yell doesn't help. Like, he's not going to understand your English the louder that you yell. Like, it just makes us which makes it a lot worse on us who are hearing you yell. And it was, yeah, that was an interesting experience. But yeah, like, you know, I have a lot of friends who've done Amazing Race and who really appreciate that experience of being able to travel the world and do such a tremendous show. But yeah, like I really look back fondly on that Paris Fashion Week and New York Fashion Week. Very yeah. tough shoots, but great experiences.
Yeah, because I even enjoyed going back to 19 Kids and Counting, because they've been to so many countries like in the past years, and I'm like, well, some of the whole crew ends up going, or just a few of them, because as they got older, they just want to travel with parents and, you know, find their soulmate. And if they have one in mind, that they have to start courting, you know, that process ordeal. But even with 90 Day, like, they've done the new spinoff of, they're in their second season of The Other Way, where the foreigner goes and lives their life with their, not the foreigner, sorry, the American goes to the foreigner's country and they start their life with them, and you get to see these amazing countries. And I've always thought, like, they got to take at least two people from the crew and then they'll outsource others, because, like, I think it gets pretty expensive.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of where what it always comes down to is, mm-hmm. you know, how many can you send? And then you know, there's so many good local crew, you know, producers, that sort of thing. So, you know, it comes down to money and the show. So, you know,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the things that a lot of us enjoy the most is, you know, it's always good to have that one trip on a show, you know, like, where did we go for? Oh, Busby. Oh, and we went on Outdaughtered when we went to New York, which was.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that one.
I was just talking to somebody about this, like the comedy of, like, you think about now, right, where we're not allowed to even, like, basically not supposed to even be near someone. We were walking to Times Square with five babies and a five-year-old and with two camera, like, literally backtracking in the streets of New York with two cameras, mom and dad carrying five babies and grandma and grandpa, like, literally just walking down the streets of New York, cameras, people bumping into us, and then getting into Times Square and we're shooting. And, like, there's people all around, and, you know, there's these babies looking wide eyed. And I was just saying to my friend, I was like, we could not, like, are people going to, when are we going to ever, are we ever going to be able to do stuff like that again? Like, you know, I mean, it was such a incredible shoot. And I was shocked we were able to pull it off, and, you know, it made the show and everything, and we did it. And I was terrified we were going to get shut down and where one of the babies was going to die. But, like, no, I mean, it went as well as could have been expected. But yeah, I mean, I think about it now and I'm like, God, you know, I wonder if you know, anybody's ever going to be able to do something like that. So
100%. I know their newest episode, which I still got to watch, was when they go to, they go skiing and they experience snow for the first time. Like, that would have been so cool, like, to be there in that moment. Cause now they're older, they're talking, they're becoming their own, little human with different personalities. And it's just like, oh my gosh, like, it's so cool. And it's, I don't know why, but I just love stuff like that. And, ever since the first two episodes, I was like, Mom, Outdaughtered, this woman had five children. And she's like, really? We just watched somebody with 19. I'm like, no, this is just five. But no, I still enjoy and I really love it. But oh my gosh, like, I'm so amazed with all this information. And I do have to ask one more thing. Do obviously the reality TV stars get paid?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just depends on, you know. Well, let me, something.
Yeah.
Like, they get paid for their time. And again, it really all depends. And I want to stress that because, like, and I question, because you keep mentioning 90 Day Fiance, and that is a weird one because it is following real relationships. So I don't know how they would do that, because generally what we try to do is if it's a real, you know, it's a real life thing and we're following you, we're, you know, we try not to really pay, you know what I'm saying? Like we try not to pay them, make it feel like more of a documentary. However, we'll pay you for your time and things that, you know, prevent you from working. You know what I'm saying? Cause obviously if you're going to be doing something and you can't work, I mean, you need to, you know, you should be compensated for that.
Yeah.
Or if you're making, you know, if you're making a 3-month commitment to the show, then, you know, you may be paid to do that. It really just depends. Things have changed so much in the past several years. So generally the answer is yes. But yeah, you know, it really just depends on kind of the nature of the show and, you know, what you're what's being required of you, and how big your role is. You know, I mean, the Busbys are the show. So of course they're going to get, even though we shot it very docu-style, you know, they it's shot very docu-style. It's really a very real life show. Of course they're being compensated because the show is about them and there is no show without them. Like,
exactly.
You know, so, but I'm, you know, I'm sure that the, you know, these dating shows like I'm Married at First Sight or 90 Day Fiance are going to be very different because it's cast, you know, there's different cast members each year. And so they're certainly going to get compensated for their time, but not in the same way.
Yeah. Makes sense. No, good to know. And I know you have a podcast and you got to promote it because I was listening to a couple episodes and I was like, oh, that singer. I'm telling you, if you were to say, hey, I'm going to be in Toronto filming reality TV, I'm going to be like, oh my gosh, I need to be there behind the scenes.
All right. Well, yeah, hopefully my sister-in-law is from Toronto. I'd love to come to Toronto and film. So I have a podcast called No Script, No Problem. It's on the Bleav Podcast Network. But you can find it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And I basically, you know, the whole idea was to shine a light on the people who, you know, are behind the scenes making the magic happen. So, you know, friends of mine, people who are producers and showrunners, development executives, people who really can tell you the funny stories and the pull the curtain back, really. And, you know, it's been fun. It's very young. I started doing it last December. And yes, Izzy Pekabarov, who's the showrunner, executive producer on Masked Singer, was a great guest. She's British and hilarious. And I love that episode. I actually just, there's a new episode that's up that where I had four incredible producers and we talked about race in reality television and, you know, all of the really powerful transformational, you know, life-changing things that are happening around America, as well as, you know, really it's happening across the world. So that was a really different kind of episode that I did, you know, because I felt like it was necessary to talk about those types of things. It runs the gamut, but yes, if you are a reality TV junkie, it's worth listening to because there are some funny stories that people share.
Yeah, I'm excited to binge listen, if that's even a thing, because you're so used to saying binge watching.
It's, but yes.
I'm excited because I was going through and I was like, oh my gosh, like even Below Deck, I know the thing is here that you always have to subscribe to something for your television to watch Below the Deck, any of the series. And I used to watch it so religiously until the TV providers decided, okay, let's charge these separate channels that we used to offer free into a bundle package. And I'm like, what? How is this going to work? Like, I literally had to pay TLC extra because, like, how could I live without 90 Day Fiancé, Outdaughtered, and all the other shows? Because when you go on TLC Go, I cannot sign in with my TV provider because it's non-existent. It's only more for the US. And I keep like requesting it because I guess there's like this link where you can request or something or email. And I did that a couple of times. I'm like, this is not fair. Like, how am I not able to log in with my TV provider? But thank goodness for PVR, you know, you got to record your shows and whenever you get a chance, you can binge watch. But then of course there's Netflix with their reality TV series as well. But I'm so excited to binge listen to your podcast because there's a lot of shows and especially a lot of my podcaster friends have watched most of these shows and I can't wait to share it with them because I'm like, oh, you get to hear behind the scenes.
I mean, that's well, I'm glad. Thank you. And and that was the whole idea. It was, I know that a lot of people want to know, well, how did this happen? Or, you know, what's it like? You know, I mean, Nadine Rajabi, you know, who's the executive producer on Below Deck Mediterranean, you know, I thought she did a great job of kind of describing what it's like to be on the boat. So I really liked that episode. And I thought Izzy was great talking about Masked Singer and kind of all the intricacies and the things that go into, you know, the clue process and really making sure that, you know, the judges, you know, how that works with the judges and everything. So I thought both those, I was really excited about both those episodes. So let me know what you think. And yeah, I hope everybody likes it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely going to let you know. I'm excited. This is why I have you on the show, because I'm like, 15 years of reality TV. I've been watching reality TV probably since I was 10, and I don't probably remember the show, but I know one of my first ones was The Little Couple with my mom, 19 Kids Again, 16 and Pregnant, and then it's just evolve. And it's funny because people are like, you don't watch, like you mentioned earlier, Game of Thrones. Like, no, who's watching that? I'm watching like Million Dollar Listing, LA, yeah. New York, Florida. I'm watching all of that stuff. But
hey, you have a very distinct taste in storytelling that you like, and that's good.
Yeah,
it's good. You know what you like. That's all that matters.
Yeah, but sometimes I'm like, should I even bother telling them what type of shows I watch? Like, I think the only scripted right now is 13 Reasons Why.
Okay.
And The Office, I watch it because it's just an old show that you can just watch numerous times, Modern Family. And I think that's it. Or there's one show on Amazon, which is John, I can't even say his last name. From The Office to friggin' becoming
Krasinski.
So I was trying to watch that and I'm like, I can't. I just got to keep watching The Office for some reason. It's just one of those shows. And I have a friend of mine who's like, I think she's at her 15th time watching it. I'm like, hey, take it easy. I'm at number 6. Like, let me catch up. But those are good shows. They're so iconic. But I really appreciate your time, Steve, honestly. I'm like so wowed out by the behind the scenes, especially from Outdaughter and Extreme Home Edition. And I'm just like, wow, thank you for letting me in on what goes on.
Of course. Yeah. No, anytime. Yeah. Thanks for watching. I appreciate. Yeah, we all appreciate you watching. And, you know, look, everybody's excited. Everybody is eager, I should say, to get back to work and keep making great content. It's a uncertain time, but I think, you know, we're now starting to hear that there's going to be some production getting back up and running in the next month or so. So we're excited.
Yeah, good to know. And I hope you guys get back, create some fantastic shows for me to keep watching and everybody else who's listening who's a reality TV junkie. I'm excited. And where can the listeners find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Steve Berkowitz or Instagram at Steve M. Berkowitz. And then, yeah, the podcast, No Script, No Problem. It is on the Bleave Podcast Network.
Well, to all my listeners, everything is going to be in the show notes. Thank you, Steve, once again, for all your time and letting me into the reality TV world behind the scenes.
Hey, thanks a lot.
To all the listeners out there, thank you for tuning in on another episode of A Little Bit of Everything with me. And that's all we have for now.
Hi, this is Michelle Miller from Mentors on the Mic podcast.
I'm Anthony.
And I'm Jessica with the Beautiful Feet podcast.
Hey, it's your boy Bromar, host of The Bromar Show.
Hello, everyone. It's the Coupon Queenpin from the CQP Moments podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is your boy Ken, a.k.a. The Gentleman of The Gentleman Lifestyle Podcast.
Hi, this is Stephanie Valente, your local massage therapist.
And you are listening to A Little Bit of Everything with Angelica.
That's it for now, and thank you for tuning in on another episode of A Little Bit of Everything with me. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Just don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on the podcast platform that you're listening to.